Good morning, 8 o'clock. Jim, along with Cake, who's in for the Buckeye Boy today. And no, he didn't take today off because Ohio State lost. He didn't give me a tearful phone call on Saturday. I can't come in Monday. I can't handle it. No, he didn't do that. He already planned on taking the day off. It's a Veterans Day for him.
It's a Vet's Day off.
It's a Vet's Day off. It's a rough weekend, sports-wise, for our boy. Some other really good things for him, but we won't get into that.
That's his deal to tell
us. For him to tell. It's Browns losing last night to our good friend Petey Pope's Ravens. So, game balls for the Broncos. Who gets game balls from yesterday? Patrick Surtain the second certainly does. I thought Baron Browning played really well. Kenny Young. Justin Simmons played well. And on the offensive side, Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams, both had big games.
Eric Saubert caught the touchdown pass. First, can't knock that.
First touchdown in his career. Teddy got hurt, had the shin injury, came back and played. And Mike is going to die on this hill. Middle school Mike is going to die on the Drew Lock should be the starting quarterback hill. Middle school Mike, I respect you digging in and you holding to your convictions. Even though he said, you or I don't have a clue what they have in Locke. Okay, here's what they have. They have a guy that has a big arm, has mobility. He's a very athletic quarterback.
However,
he's a guy that turns it over left and right, though.
And where I will give, not necessarily credit, but where I will say, yeah, there are some things about Drew Locke that has not gone his way that are maybe outside of his control. He has never, in his dating back to his college career and now his NFL career, never really had continuity at the offensive coordinator position. He's had multiple OCs
until the last 2 years.
Until the last 2 years. But that has also meant that he's it now with continuity with Pat Shurmur, who I think is not a great OC, but it's still continuity. It's still there. He's still supposed to be, you know, doing well enough to make, you know, to earn the starting job. And he just didn't do that this year. I'm sorry, but especially seeing after the way he played yesterday, he showed why he did not earn the starting job to begin the regular season.
Look, was Drew terrible in the preseason? No, he wasn't terrible.
No.
It was a fairly close competition. But it came down to that Seattle game, and I forgot who caught the touchdown pass, but it was a brilliant throw by Teddy. And that's where this coaching staff said, that's our guy. He's not going to turn it over. He's going to complete passes at a higher percentage, which you look at, you know, and look, Teddy's got some years on Drew to kind of, you know, build up the resume a little bit longer, 2014 to right now, where Drew came in the league in 2019. And you look at it right now that, you know, it's far as a completion percentage, almost 67% for Teddy, under 60 for Drew Lock. Teddy's got a better touchdown interception ratio. He's actually taken a team to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually quarterback teams still winning records in his career. I'm just like, once again, is Teddy the answer long term for this team? No. It's Drew Lock. No. Do they need to have a different answer? Whether it's Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, I don't know. They have a clone of John Elway or Peyton Manning that they're growing somewhere, you know,
in a laboratory
at the UC Health facility that they're getting ready to roll out for 2022. I don't know what the answer is. It's neither one of these guys, though. If you want this team to get back to being an AFC contender, not just an AFC West contender, an AFC contender to get to the Super Bowl, they're going to have better quarterbacking in 2022. Neither guy's the answer. Let's just be honest about that. And you can sit here and bang the drum all you want for Drew Lock. He says that, it was a stupid throw, but let's be honest here. They have completely ruined any possibility of him being the quarterback of this team at any time. My gripe about TB is, you already know, is what he is, and he's not good enough to make this team a playoff team. But Mike, where are the numbers that say that Drew Locke's good enough to get this team to the playoffs? Show me that. You make it sound like if Drew Locke is playing quarterback, this team doesn't have five losses. I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. I'm just not. You have an issue with Teddy Bridgewater. Okay, fine. You don't like him as a quarterback. I understand he has a ceiling. And I think we saw what he can do when he was with New Orleans.
Yeah.
He can come in, hold down the fort. He's not going to turn it over. He's going to be okay. I don't know if he's a starting quarterback in this league anymore long term. But he's the best answer Denver has right now. They don't have a better answer. John Elway, Peyton Manning, Jake Plummer, hell, Brian Greasy. They're not walking through that door. This is who you've got right now. And this coaching staff feels better with Bridgewater at the helm. They feel like he's the better option. He's the veteran guy that's not going to turn the ball over. When Drew gets in like yesterday, what are you doing? Don't do that. I get it that you haven't been getting the reps. I understand that. But that's a play where, come on, either throw it out of bounds, tuck it and run and get what you can out of it. Why are you trying to throw a pass where you have no chance of completing that pass to Kendall Hinton? You have no chance of completing that.
Right.
And Derwin James makes a great play because he's a great player. You made it easy for him. I mean, you just don't turn it over. Part of Drew's problem has always been this. He's always, I know I can make a play here. I know I can take chicken poop and turn it into chicken salad. I can make a play here. I can dazzle. And he ends up making a bonehead play like he did yesterday, which they got on the score off of it. If you want to know why he's not starting, that's the reason why he's not starting middle school, Mike. That's why. Too many of those kind of plays. Too many of those moments for him. They didn't trust him to start out the season. He needed to beat Teddy and beat Teddy convincingly. And it was pretty much a 50-50 battle. And they were going to go with the veteran quarterback. And I don't think it's been the wrong decision.
Not at this. I mean,
look, at this point in time, I don't.
They're 6-5, which is a winning record, and a chance next week to go into Kansas City. And if they win, which I hope they do, and they can play. We forget, right? So last year.
Guess who played really well in Kansas City last year?
The Denver Broncos.
I'm talking about the quarterback.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy, when he was with Carolina, played really well against the Chiefs last year.
And I think when the Broncos hosted, what was the game? Was it in Denver or was it in Kansas City when they had the Tyreek Hill, no touchdown, should have been a touchdown, should have challenged the play? Was that in Denver or was that in Kansas City?
Whew.
I think that was in Kansas City.
That might be. I do not recall. I don't recall.
Either way, in that game, it was close enough to where Denver had a fighting chance to beat the Chiefs. They just couldn't because
Denver's hasn't been as good as Kansas City.
But here you have a chance next week, and it's a slim chance. And I get it. It's a slim chance. And this has been such a bizarro roller coaster season and team overall that you're not sure who's going to show up. Is it going to be the team we saw last night? Is it going to be the team we saw against Dallas? Or is it going to be the one we saw against Philadelphia? You really don't know. You can only hope and pray. But if it's the team that showed up yesterday and goes into Kansas City and runs roughshod, hopefully, you're talking about a team that's now in first place in the AFC West. Which is how they're going to have to get to the... If they have any chance of getting to the playoffs, that's how they're going to do it.
You got to win division games. Yesterday was huge. They have now four division games left. And they did what they had to do yesterday to at least keep themselves in the conversation. You know, the Broncos have lost 11 straight to the Chiefs. History is not on their side.
No.
Let's just be honest about that.
But you know what? They could snap that.
They could.
Anytime you've got a streak going, it can end just like that.
And Mike goes on to say that, so why push all your chips into the middle of on a season that ends up being a sub 500 one? You're making the assumption that Drew Lock is going to play at even a Patrick Mahomes level where Mahomes was not playing well recently. You're expecting him to go out and put up a career kind of numbers. He had the chance in training camp. He did not decisively defeat Teddy Bridgewater for the job. They were going to go with the veteran guy who they felt like had the better upside in terms of taking care of the football, who they could trust, who Vic Fangio felt like he could trust, who Pat Shurmur felt like he could trust. You can't make the assumption, boy, if they're playing Drew Lock, boy, this team's 7-8 wins. Because that's what you're doing there. You're making that assumption. What about how bad the defense played against Philadelphia? This got ran over. That's not in Bridgewater. You want to criticize Teddy about the business decision thing and you know what he said after the game? Okay, fine. I'm fine with that. But you can't assume that because they're playing Drew Lock, boy, this team's won 7 or 8 games. I didn't see it back then in training camp. Didn't see it in the preseason.
Nope.
Don't see it now. Once again, though, do I think that they have the answer quarterback for 2022? Abso-freaking-lutely no. They do not.
And here's the other thing, too. On the sub-500 scale, first of all, Denver's above 500 right now. And here's their upcoming schedule. You got Kansas City next week. A game that, depending entirely on who shows up, could be either 50-50 or not. And I'm hoping it's the former and not the latter. And then you got the Lions. The sad, sad, sad Lions. The depression on a football field. Depression manifest in the form of a
just
football team.
Sad.
That's a win. I'm sorry, but that's a win.
But you know what, though? That's the kind of game where this football team, being the schizophrenic football team that they are.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Could have the Lions hang around with them and find a way to beat them.
That's entirely fair.
Because you just don't know what you're getting with this football team.
You really don't.
Now, this year, they have teams that are bad teams. They have pretty much handled.
Jacksonville, New York, and the Giants, both New Yorks.
Yeah. Well, the Giants, you know, give the Giants credit. They've started to kind of turn it around a little bit. It's a good win against Philly yesterday. Team that smoked the Broncos.
But here's the rest of the game. So you got Kansas City next week, Detroit the week after. The Cincinnati game is going to be really tough.
Cincinnati's playing well.
It's in Denver, which, you know, that
helps.
That may or may not help. I mean, the crowd sizes this year have been a little lackluster.
Hey, yesterday was pretty good.
Yesterday was good. There was only about 9,000 or so no shows. But then you have the Raiders in Vegas. And, you know, that could be a winnable game. Vegas is kind of starting to slip, although they did win against
good win against
Dallas.
The Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day.
So that could be a winnable game. And then you have the Chargers, and we know that's a winnable game because we beat them yesterday. And then you have the Chiefs to close out the regular season, which, if depending on how things go next week, I mean, you're talking about that regular season finale potentially being AFC West division winner.
You're hoping that's the case, but once again, it's another week and it's another game in the AFC West, and they have to go to Kansas City where they don't play well there. They haven't played well against this Chiefs team. They've lost 11 straight, and so they've got some history working against them. All right, Rolled Tacos sent in a text today, Chick-fil-A breakfast team phone line. I heard some of the sound bites of Dave Logan's calls from yesterday. Not sure why you left off Locke's interception. It was more for expediency, Rolled Tacos.
Expediency, and we're trying to be positive
here. So in honor of Mike, or for people who just wanted to hear it, please broadcast the call. You know what, Rolled Tacos? You ask for it.
Ask and ye shall receive.
I'm going to deliver. Here is yesterday. This is Dave Logan's call, Drew Lock's interception.
Play fake, and Lock in trouble now. Throws a ball that is intercepted. Penalty flag thrown. That ball intercepted by Derwin James. I'm not sure what the flag was thrown on. is a terrible decision by Drew there.
Didn't you get the feeling that Dave wanted to say, what the bleep was he doing there?
Not no.
What the flag? What was that? What was that about?
Flag was not the only four-letter F word he was thinking about, but he knew he couldn't say it.
He knew he couldn't say it.
But you know,
quickly
it was there.
Went to being about the flag, not about the Drew Lock decision. All right, let's take a trip around the National Football League this morning. We'll go back to Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
Why not? Let's go all the way back to the triple header on Thursday. And we start things out with, yikes, the Bears game. The Bears and the Lions. As Cairo Santos lines it up for the game winner, Joe Buck with a call on Fox, as Chicago continues the heartbreak for the Detroit Lions.
28-yard try by Santos to win it. Good snap, good hold, good kick, goodbye.
I like that from Joe Buck. Good snap, good hold, good kick, goodbye.
Chicago wins 16-14. Bears are now, the Bears are 4-7. Lions, 10-1. Yikes. Andy Dalton, pretty good day, 317, touchdown and a pick. Jared Goff made his return after being injured, 171, a couple of touchdowns, but not enough as the Bears get the victory over the Detroit Lions.
I feel so bad for them. The second game of the Thanksgiving Day slate, Raiders-Cowboys tied at 33 at the end of regulation, so to overtime we go. It would be the Cowboys. I'm wrong. Am I wrong? I might be wrong.
About who won?
About who won.
Cowboys lost, Raiders won.
Okay, I am.
Or sorry, Cowboys won.
Not enough coffee in that thing. So Raiders.
No, hold a second. It was, pardon me. Let's double check that. Thanksgiving was, Raiders won at 36-33. I think you had a typo there. I'm like,
I did. Yeah. I do have a typo.
36-33, the Raiders get the win. I'm like, I remember watching that game, and I remember watching the Cowboys win that game.
Maybe that's just me.
It's okay.
Sort of wishing it was.
You were wishing it was the Cowboys.
Anyway, so, but Vegas is 6-5. Cowboys are 7-4.
And then you wrapped up Thanksgiving night with the Buffalo, Josh Allen, and the Bills taking on former Bronco Trevor Siemian and the New Orleans Saints. Josh Allen goes for four touchdowns, did throw a couple of picks, but it was a dominant performance by the Buffalo Bills. They just hammered the Saints with the victory in that final game of Thanksgiving, 31-6. So with the victory, the Bills, their record improves to 7-4. Saints fall to 5-6 on the season, as Buffalo stays within a game of the New England Patriots. We'll talk about the Patriots in just a moment. All right, moving on.
Bengals and Steelers, Joe Mixon, pretty solid day. Two touchdowns, 28 carries, 165 yards. Joe Burrow, 20 of 24 for 190. Bengals, 41-10 victory. They are 7-4. Steelers, 5-5-1.
Getting bungled yesterday by Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. Tampa Bay, they're now 8-3. They had a heck of a game against the Colts. Tell you what, Indianapolis has been playing really, really well. But the Buccaneers, though, able to come back and win it 38-31 over Indianapolis. Tom Brady, 226, touchdown and a pick. Once again, you're hearing the, oh, Brady's old. Brady's washed up. Brady can't play anymore. He did well enough for them to win 38-31 yesterday. Leonard Fournette, three touchdowns in the ground, 100 yards for him. Carson Wentz, the much maligned Carson Wentz, been playing well lately. He did have two interceptions yesterday, but 306 and three touchdowns. Jonathan Taylor, 83 yards and a touchdown as the Buccaneers get the victory over the Colts, but the Colts still very much alive in the AFC playoff race, and particularly in the AFC South right now.
Fournette, three rushing touchdowns and one receiving touchdown. This was the game winner for Leonard Fournette. Kevin Burkhardt on the call for Fox.
Gumbo formation. They were running in a big hole. Who needs a field goal? Fournette goes for the end zone, and he's in! Touchdown, Tampa Bay!
Who needs a field goal when you got touchdowns? Come on.
Exactly.
Right. Let's see. Panthers, Dolphins. Cam Newton getting benched. Tua Tagovailoa finding Jaylen Waddle 9 times for the Dolphins for 137 yards and a TD. Dolphins and Panthers now both 5-7.
All right. Mentioned the New England Patriots, your leaders in the AFC East, maybe the hottest team in the NFL right now. Oh, it's painful to say. Yeah. They take down the Titans 36-13 yesterday. Patriots, they move to 8-4. The Titans are now 8-4 as Mac Jones, 3-10, two touchdowns, did not throw a pick yesterday. Ryan Tannehill, just 93 yards, a touchdown interception yesterday. But Dontrell Hilliard, boy, had a big day filling in for Derrick Henry. 131 yards and 12 carries and a touchdown yesterday, but not enough as the Patriots beat the Titans. I said both teams now 8-4 on the season.
God, I hate Bill Belichick. Anyway, Giants and Eagles, normally a classic showdown. We've had Miracle at the Meadowlands. We've had, not this one. Jalen Hurts, 3 interceptions. Yikes. Daniel Jones, much to his credit and surprise, not turning the ball over. Giants win 13-7. They're 4-7 overall. Eagles at 5-7.
All right, your Giant, who gives a crap game from yesterday? Atlanta taking on Jacksonville. Atlanta gets the win 21-14. Falcons are now 5-6. The Jags are 2-9. Matt Ryan, 190 yards, touchdown, a pick. Trevor Lawrence, one of his better games, actually, 228, a touchdown, an interception. Cordarrelle Patterson, though, boy, he's turned into a really special weapon for Arthur Smith. 18 carries, 108 yards, a couple of touchdowns. He also had two catches for 27 yards. James Robinson had 86 yards on the ground for the Jags yesterday. Falcons get the win over Jacksonville.
You mentioned the who gives a you-know-what game. This one, I think, is even worse. Your game of the week. New York Jets, Houston Texans. Zach Wilson doing Zach Wilson things and throwing an interception. But it does not kill the Jets' chances of winning. In fact, New York is doing a nice job running the ball on the ground. They get the win, 21-14. The Jets are 3-8. The Texans are 2-9.
Then you have the Rams taking on the Packers. The status, you know, was, you know, up in the air a little bit for Aaron Rodgers about the whether turf toe, COVID toe, whatever the deal was with his toe was, that was going to maybe keep him out of the game. But then he didn't practice last week, but was cleared to go on Sunday as the Packers squared off against the Rams. And the win goes to the Packers yesterday as Green Bay takes the 36-28 victory. They're now 9-3. The Rams are 7-4. Matthew Stafford, 302, three touchdowns and a pick yesterday to lead the Rams. Rodgers, 307, couple of touchdowns on the day yesterday. A.J. Dillon was tough to stop in some short yardage situations for Green Bay. Dillon was 69 yards yesterday, but the Packers get the victory over the Rams in what many at one point thought could be a NFC Championship game showdown, or a little preview. Well, we'll see if that is still the case moving forward.
Rams, by the way, are 0-3 since the Von Miller trade.
Yeah, they have not looked good.
Vikings at 49ers, a little bit of a back-and-forth battle for these two. San Francisco's defense is the one that comes through with the late stop on fourth down. Here's Kenny Albert for Fox.
Cousins on fourth down and 8. Fires incomplete.
Vikings now 5-6. 49ers 6-5. Winners of 3 straight.
And then your Sunday night game. Baltimore. They move to 8-3 on the season. They beat Cleveland by the score of 16-10. The Browns are now 6-6 as Baker Mayfield throws for 247 yards and a touchdown. He'd been really beat up, but was healthier leading up to this game and played much better. Lamar Jackson, 185, threw not one, not two, not three, but 4 interceptions. He did throw a touchdown. Jackson also rushed for 68 yards on the night, but it was the Ravens' defense that really came up big in that game. 16-10, the Ravens beat the Browns in a big AFC North showdown. Then, of course, tonight, Monday Night Football starts at 5:30 here on the team. Washington, they won their last two. They played well with Taylor Heineke at quarterback. They take on Seattle tonight once again, pregame at 5:30, right here on the team. All right, that's around the NFL. We'll take a break. We'll come back, bring you some of Vic Fangio's presser from yesterday. We'll have that. Also, we'll look back at the weekend for the Maverick basketball teams. Some of the postgame with Mike DeGeorge and Taylor Wagner as the Mavericks get ready to open up RMAC play. Kind of weird. Saturday-Sunday games at Colorado Christian and Metro State.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. We'll have our Mighty Mavs of the weekend as well. That's coming up in just a few minutes. So today it's the good, the bad, the ugly. For some of you, Michigan winning is a good thing. Some of you, it's a bad thing, like our friend the Buckeye boy. Darren Chiaverini gets canned. I feel bad for Chiaverini because he's been the good company man during his time with Colorado, but it shows that they've got to make a change, you know, in terms of how they address the offense in Colorado.
Right.
And I still think, though, it gets back to the offensive line. I agree with those that criticize how they've, because they made the change. You're coaching the offensive line. They fired their offensive line coach in season. They've got to be like Utah, because Colorado's not going to be like SC or Oregon.
No.
They've got to be a physical football team. They've got to be a team that plays great defense, runs the football, and gets competent quarterback play. Look, Brendan Lewis, freshman, he didn't play great. We know that. He had a bad 2021 season. But a lot of that was also based on an offensive line that played like garbage at times. So, yeah. You know, but Chiaverini was going to be part of that fallout. Some heads were going to roll, and Darren Chiaverini's name was going to be probably near the top of that list, considering it was one of the worst offenses in Division I football this season. So a texter call us today, 970-242-1340+. We'll talk about Lincoln Riley coming to the Pac-12 to coach at USC. I'm not coaching at LSU, but I didn't say anything about SC, though. Didn't say a thing about Southern Cal. All right, we'll have that coming up a little bit as well. Text or call us. Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
It's a good show.
Probably the best show around.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado Sports Leader, The Team.
I'm all right. Nobody but about me.
Welcome back, Jim, along with Cake today, in for the Buckeye Boy. Text or call us, 970-242-1340. Let's see, we got one from Jared this morning. My knock on Bridgewater is that he doesn't push the ball down the field. He did early on in the season, but they need to stretch the field with Sutton. They're wasting him right now. You know, the numbers early on, because the narrative about Teddy was...
Couldn't throw deep.
Well, his attempts were among the best, the most in the league in terms of passes 20 yards or more. But you're right. I don't feel like that they are trying to get the ball down the field to Sutton, to Judy. You know, some of the deep crossing patterns,
right?
That, you know, where Denver's been able to sometimes have some success. You know, between the hash marks throwing the football or the vertical routes. I tend to agree. You got a big physical receiver in Cortland Sutton, and he had 2 catches for 17 yards yesterday. You know, is that Teddy? Is that Pat Shurmur? Is it a combination?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Could be a little bit of both.
But
it's a valid point, though.
You also have to take into consideration, number one, that Bridgewater was a little dinged up. Shin injury. They probably didn't want to overdo it with him. Probably didn't want to put him in situations where he was in the pocket for too long, because that could have meant, especially with however many offensive linemen were down, probably didn't want to put him in situations where he had to stay in the pocket for longer than 3 or 4 seconds.
Well, and part of my criticism too is the not throwing enough play action passes, not committing to the run, and they did run the ball really well yesterday. But where's play action passes?
Right.
In this offense, it doesn't seem like it's there on a very consistent basis. From Mountain Dave up in Colburn, game balls to the offensive line, that was impressive. I mean, think you had Quinn Bailey and Quinn Miners. Got the mighty Quinns in there.
Apparently.
You know, Reisner goes down. Calvin Anderson goes down. I mean, they're plugging guys in left and right. Mike Munchak's like the little Dutch boy, you know, with the water coming out of the dike. You know, okay, it's, you know, trying to plug guys in as, you know, quickly as possible. And that line stayed together. They held up and did a nice job yesterday. Let's see. Sertan is an easy pick. I have a new play to add to Elway's, the helicopter. Bridgewater's the lunge. The kid did a lot to make up the lack of errors last week. Fun to watch yesterday. Going from Mike. Bridgewater's a starting caliber quarterback. He is better than average, and he is not old at 29, which didn't say he was old at 29. Said that was an intriguing thing because he just turned 29 this fall, that he could be your long-term answer. Possibly there was one thing I was ruminating on one day on the show. It's like, well, you know, he could foreseeably be your quarterback for the next 5 to 6 years because he's just 29. So didn't say he was too old. Actually said the opposite. He just turned 29. I don't feel like, though, if you're Denver, that Teddy's the answer, though. I think Teddy is good in stretches.
Yeah.
And maybe it's Pat Shurmur. Maybe Shurmur's the problem here. And maybe I'm not giving Teddy enough credit for being a guy that could be a long-term starting quarterback. Because I did kind of think that at one point. Hey, maybe this works out. I'm not sure about that. When you've got a Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers that you could possibly go out and get, are you going to tell me, Mike, that Teddy's going to be your choice over those guys? I don't think so. I just don't. He's better than Greasy and Cutler. I would say probably in that territory. I'd say maybe better than Greasy. I have to look at Brian's career numbers. Cutler had a tendency to turn it over. He says he's not as good as Jake the Snake. Yeah, I'm just not sold on Teddy as your long-term answer, though, at quarterback. At one point, I mused about that idea. I thought about it, and I'm just not sure that Teddy is the long-term answer here. In fact, I don't think he is. I also don't think Drew Lock is either. Roll Tacos, you're welcome for playing the Drew Lock interception. From Troy, how about that airball kicker in the Florida State game? Tell me you guys saw that. I watched the video of that. Goes to kickoff and just totally, the Florida State kicker just totally fans on it. Just whiffs. It's priceless. The unnamed texter this morning. Good morning, unnamed texter. Javonte Williams is far and away my favorite Bronco right now. Trying to tackle him is like trying to tackle a bowling ball. He's a beer wagon. Pookie's a beer wagon.
I love it.
Also, Drew Lock can't throw his clipboard in frustration without it being intercepted. He is putrid. This is GJ and GJ. Okay, very good. GJ, good morning. All right, before we play some of Vic Fangio, do you have the number game ready?
I am ready to go.
Okay, here we go.
Let's play the number game on the Jim Davis Show.
All right, since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, how many Broncos rookies have recorded multiple interceptions in a game?
Oh, it's a good one. Since PS2 did his thing yesterday. All right, so your choice today of a case of Coors Original, the banquet beer from High Country Beverage, Colorado Classic, by the way, or Qdoba today. So if you've won the last 2 weeks, you have to sit it out. First answer wins. Give the question more time.
Since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, how many Broncos rookies have recorded multiple interceptions in a game?
All right, first correct answer wins. Your choice today, 970-242-1340. Let's bring you some of the postgame from yesterday. Vic Fangio talking to the media after the Broncos win over the LA Chargers.
Hey, Vic, congrats on the win.
Thank you.
Pat Surtain had two interceptions. Teddy, can you sort of take us through what you saw in those two plays and just his instincts on those?
Yeah. Well, first off, Pat has great hands and great ball anticipation, and both of them came in handy right there. You know, those are big plays. The first one, you know, probably saves 3 points. They probably would kick a field goal there, although they could have went for it on fourth down. And the next one, they're in field goal range again, and it becomes 7 points for us. So those are two big swings in the game and big, big plays.
Yeah, Coach, can you take us through Teddy's injury there? I think it was the first quarter. Drew coming in, and then what happened to let Teddy back into the game there?
Yeah, he suffered a shin injury. I don't have all the particulars, but for you guys that have ever had a shin injury, kind of swells up real quick, which his did. They had to take some tests to make sure nothing was happening underneath it. And he toughed it out. You know, he was nowhere near 100% in that second half. And but he toughed it out and led the offense. You know, offensively in the second half, we only had 3 possessions. And the first one wasn't good. We went 3 and out. Second one, we got the big touchdown drive for Eric Saubert's first touchdown, which was a great play on Teddy's part. And then the third drive we had in the second half was the 4-minute, and we ran the clock out. You know, so two out of three drives in the second half were excellent. You know, statistically, I don't even know what it, you know, it's going to say we had 302 yards, but, you know, which is kind of pedestrian, but it really was a pretty good day offensively in light of how the game unfolded, because they had some long drives on us in the second half. And I see here we were 8 of 11 on third down offensively. You do that and run it 33 times, you know, you're on your way to a good chance of winning.
Teddy was under sharp criticism after the Philly game because of the one play, the tackle, but you stood behind him. What does that fourth quarter drive mean to you in terms of Teddy and what it kind of does with his standing?
Yeah, Teddy's toughness is unquestioned when you talk about him. And I didn't question it in the big picture. And, you know, like I've said, some of you have asked me, you know, he's our quarterback, and it's as simple as that.
How impressed were you with the defense there on the field a lot in the third quarter? Didn't give up any points. And then Bradley Chubb, what do you think of him?
Yeah, it was great to have him back. You know, I don't know exactly how many plays he played. The way the game was going in the first half, it was – he could have played a lot of plays because we had you know, a three and out, a three and out. Then they did have a 10-play drive. Then they had a 5- and 6-play drive. You know, that lends itself to getting a lot of snaps proportionately when you're trying to pitch count a guy. But then when you – the two long drives in the second half, you know, that's when it starts taking its toll and you got to watch how much you're playing them. But we were thrilled to have him back. We love the guy. He's a great player. I'm glad he got this under his belt, and hopefully bigger and better things are coming.
I got two for you. If Drew doesn't throw that interception, does it make the decision to bring Teddy back in the second half a little harder? And then right before halftime, did you think about calling a timeout before clocking it and then maybe running the play and clocking it if you pick up more yards to set up a field goal?
No, we just took a little too long a time there. I was wanting to save the timeout so we could throw it anywhere and try a long field goal, but it didn't work out. What was the first part of your question?
If Drew doesn't throw the pick,
I don't think so. No.
Vic, in the second half, I think you only had one week one offensive starter on the offensive line that was in the game. You know, just a lot of guys filling in that spot, still run for over 150 yards. What was just your impression of how those guys filled in?
I thought those guys did a great job. You know, Quinn Bailey comes off the practice squad and plays a ton of plays against some good pass rushers. And obviously we ran the ball, so thrilled for him. Moody comes in, first action he's had in a while, thrilled for him. And we already had backups out there. So, you know, unfortunately, we seem to have the patent on losing guys, even no matter how hard we try not to. So I'm anticipating that tide will turn at some point.
Vic, you've talked about the depth of the offensive line. Follow up on that, was today kind of a reassertion that you do have some good depth there? And
yeah,
then
I mean, when Calvin plays for us, I'm not worried. When Quinn goes in there, Minards, and plays, I'm not worried. Moody, I'm not worried. You know, we have good quality depth, you know. And to see a guy like Bailey go in there and play in a game this late in the season that has some meaning to it and play as well as he did. Now, I haven't watched him, you know. I'll give him a grade after the tape, but just to go in there and for our offense to operate and operate well in two of those three drives, you know, it's credit to him and credit to Munch and Coop for bringing him along.
Yeah. All right, there's Vic Fangio, that courtesy of 850 KOA. Vic talking about the win over the LA Chargers yesterday. All right, text or call us. Game balls for the Broncos. Who gets them? Also, you're good, the bad, the ugly from the weekend, 970-242-1340. Do we have a winner yet, by the way, for the number game?
Do.
Alrighty.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the contest.
It's another winner on the Team Sports Network.
A big congratulations in a case of Coors going out to Kit. Kit for correctly answering that since the AFL-NFL merger, there have been three Broncos rookies to have recorded multiple interceptions in a game. Now, you mentioned the one, Pat Surtain. Do you think you can name the other two?
Who? Broncos rookies.
Broncos rookies.
Justin Simmons?
Nope. You got to go back a ways.
Dennis Smith?
Nope.
Give me one more and we'll... Louis Wright?
Nope.
Okay, I'm...
Steve Foley and Steve Atwater.
The two Steves, and a couple of my favorites.
They are they and Pat Surtain, the three Broncos rookies to have recorded multiple interceptions in a single game.
Steve Foley, the converted quarterback turned safety for the Broncos Orange Crush.
And Steve Atwater, also a converted quarterback turned safety.
But Foley played quarterback in the World Football League and then got moved to safety as a pro player. So Steve made his transition far earlier in regard to position than Steve Foley did. All right, well, Kit, nicely done. Congratulations. All right, coming up next, we'll have Good Call, Bad Call. Also, we'll look back at the Maverick basketball weekend, have your Mighty Mavs for you as well. That's on the way next. Text or call us, Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, 970-242-1340.
Touchdown every morning.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team.
Welcome back, 847. Jim along with Cake in for the Buckeye Boy today. I do like the Ram Jam version of this song, but I like the Spider-Bait version better. Have you ever heard the Spider-Bait version?
I have not.
Black Betty, it's really, really good.
Okay.
Check it out sometime.
I'll add it to the list.
All right. There's your music tip for the day today. Okay, let's get to...
Was that a good call, or did they totally blow it? It's Good Call or Bad Call.
All right, got a couple. You're going to go back to the college football weekend. Alabama taking on Auburn. Four overtimes, Alabama prevails. But Brian Harsin, why aren't you going for two in overtime? Come on.
Come on.
Alabama had the momentum. Go for two. What are you going to lose? That was a bad call not to go for two in overtime.
Yeah. God, Auburn should have won that game. I'm sorry. They should have won it. I don't care. All right.
Because they had to make the decision. It was 17-16. Harsin decides to kick the extra point, or he can go for the win with the two-point conversion. Should have gone for the two-point conversion.
Probably okay. So.
Go ahead.
All right. Good call, bad call. Vic Fangio challenging if Justin Herbert was down before Justin Simmons knocked the ball loose. Bad call.
Bad call.
Very bad.
Bad call.
Whoever is telling Vic to challenge plays needs to get an eye exam and maybe a new job.
Because it's like, he was down and the ball comes out after he's down. No.
Bad call.
Bad call. Bad call.
Yeah.
Good call, bad call. The NFL needs a sky judge because they're relying more on replay officials. Yesterday, case in point, the play with Tennessee where Ryan Tannehill throws a short pass and a little screen to Nick Westbrook, who slips and falls down. But then he rolls into the end zone. Nobody touched him.
Nope.
It's a touchdown. But they said he was down, though no player touched him. And so Mike Vrabel has to end up using a challenge to challenge a play that he shouldn't have had to challenge.
Yep.
That's why the NFL needs to follow what the XFL did and have a sky judge who goes, hey, by the way, nobody touched him. That's a touchdown. And jump right in there. NFL hasn't really clearly defined the role of replay officials. They need to clearly define it, and that's where the replay official could have immediately made the correct call.
And I would like to see what they do with the XFL, where you can hear what they're saying.
Love it if they would do that.
When they're talking about how they're coming to a decision to make that sort of play.
Absolutely.
All right, this is a question. Good call, bad call. Some in Cleveland are calling for Baker Mayfield to sit it out in favor of Case Keenum. Good call, bad call?
Don't think he was the reason they lost yesterday.
But he is kind of dinged up.
He's beat up probably because of that, yes. But then again, what's that going to be? There are going to be fans, oh, come on, Baker's not tough enough. We need him out there right now.
Does he give you a better chance to win than Case Keenum? I mean, maybe.
I think so at this point, yeah.
But also, he's hurt. And look, they're in last place in their division right now. But they're still 6-6.
They're still in it.
They're still in it. By all accounts, they're still in it. However, I think I'd rather run the risk, right? give me Nick Chubb and, you know, the rest of those backs.
Kareem Hunt,
the guy that ran roughshod on the Broncos, the undrafted guy. What's his name? Can't remember, but whatever. It's fine. Tried to block that memory. You know, let them run. Let them score.
Lean on the run game.
Run the risk of putting Case Keenum in there just for these next couple, you know, next few weeks, and then maybe have a relatively healthy or at least rested Baker Mayfield when you need to go for a playoff push. That'd be my, but again, I don't know. Do you just run the risk of maybe keeping Baker out there for a longer stretch?
Or if Keenum doesn't play well, then why weren't you playing Baker?
Exactly. He gave you
the best chance to win.
Exactly.
All right. Both Maverick basketball teams had very successful weekends at the Holiday Inn Airport Thanksgiving Classic. Both the men and the women sweeping their games. The Maverick women beating Montana Western, who a couple of years ago won the NAI National Championship. And after the game, Dave Yonke, CMU SID, had the chance to talk with Taylor Wagner about the Maverick women's victory. Taylor, by the way, 18-0 in the Thanksgiving Airport Classic, by the way. Here's Taylor Wagner after the win against Montana Western.
You go to 18-0 in this tournament since you've been here, 5-0 for the first time since 2017. Kind of your opening thoughts of the season so far?
Pretty good. We got a lot of room to improve, especially going into RMAC play. A lot of tough teams. You know, no easy games this year in the RMAC. So we've got to continue to get better, and hopefully we can build. We did some good things this weekend, and there were some things that we still, you know, need to work on.
You know, you get a good effort from Danny Turner tonight. Double-double, career-high 11 rebounds. Mariah was great offensively, and you had a good defensive effort in the first half.
Yeah, I thought our first half was really phenomenal. We shot the ball really well, and then again the second half, it's been, you know, our Achilles heel, where we just don't come out and play with any energy in the second half. So we really got to find that, otherwise it's going to be a long year.
And you just kind of mentioned it, going into RMAC play starting next weekend, Metro and Colorado Christian. What do you got to improve on heading into that weekend?
Well, we got to play a complete game. That's the biggest thing. And, you know, I think, you know, we have some bad turnovers. We got to value the ball a little bit more. And then I just think defensively we got to be a little bit tougher. You know, one-on-one stuff, we get beat. And you know, we don't really put any effort a lot of the times. I think that's the biggest thing I want to see.
All right, so the Maverick women sweep the weekend. Likewise for the Maverick men. Here's Mike DeGeorge.
You get a really good effort from just about everybody who played tonight, but you get 20 points from Owen Coons off the bench. Just talk about your team's effort.
Yeah, you know, I think the group tries really hard, obviously. It's just a tough-minded group. Every guy is versatile, and every night somebody can put 20 on the board, and Owen's certainly capable of doing that every night. So it's really the strength of this group is our versatility. And the thing that I loved is it going to be their physicality or our versatility that wins out? About 13 minutes ago, they subbed their bigs out and went all guards. And so, you know, that's what we got to be able to do to teams, and that was good for us tonight to get ready for the league.
Yeah, one of the other things that a lot of people have noticed is the energy that this team brings. Yeah. Every guy that comes in, it seems like they bring a different energy. You get Blaze Threat that drives the lane. You get Reese Johnson on the perimeter that brings a different energy. Yeah. Just talk about you said versatility of the team. Talk about that energy that you have.
Yeah, I think part of the strength of having really like nine starters, which is really what we have, is that you're bringing in a guy that's a potentially all-conference kind of player into the game, and so we're able to keep them fresh. They're all really tough competitors, and they are able to play really hard because they know they don't know how long they're going to be on the floor. So,
all right, there's Mike DeGeorge. So Owen Coons had a big game, 20 points for him, 89% from the field. He's one of our mighty Mavs. Mariah Martine, and CMU best, 23 points the other night in the Maverick win. So congratulations to the Maverick basketball teams. We'll take a break. Hour 3 coming up next.